This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Podbay 2A, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Prairie Studios. We alter your locus coeruleus by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This warms your brain to a tasty and toasty 420 kelvins to keep a sin flood of statism out of your head. Can you feel it? Is it working? Can you feel it, Phil?
Oh, I can feel it, Jeremy.
All right.
Definitely feel it.
Spectacular. And as always, the Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT, no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except government. Learn more at BIPCOT.org.
Worms.
So we are here. We're back. I am Jeremy. I'm joined tonight by Phil. Michael may or may not be joining us later on. And it's been a heck of a few days for me. How the heck are you, Phil?
I am apparently doing a lot better than you are.
Yeah.
Dang.
Yes, I have quickly become one of the most hated men in this country. And it's all because a little Facebook post I made the other day that went viral. And it has been a whirlwind since then. I guess it was Wednesday, Thursday. I was out at, you know, driving around doing my normal thing for work. And there was a funeral for a New York City firefighter, which took place out here in my town, right in the heart of where a lot of my clients live. And there had been, you know, the town around here, they call and leave messages on your voicemail to tell you of events and stuff like that. Normally, I ignore them because I don't want to hear what they have to say. But I caught that one. So I knew the event was happening. So I restructured my day the best I could because, you know, I let dogs out while people are at work, among other things. Although, you know, most of these people who are very, very mad at me keep throwing, you know, keep saying that all I do is pick up dog poop. Not really my job, what my job is, but okay. It's an aspect of my job. But anyway, you know, so I go to different people's houses and I have a certain amount of time to be there because the owners are gone for a select amount of time during the day. And I'm supposed to get there in the middle of that time so that their dog is not waiting too long on either end to go to the bathroom. So there's a kind of a tight window on these things. Another thing these people who want my head don't understand. And so I restructured my day the best I could, put myself in that neighborhood where I normally would have been earlier, as late as I possibly could, and where I wasn't making the dog, you know, hold his poor bladder any longer than he had to. And, you know, I went about my day. And then when I got to that area, traffic all of a sudden just stopped. And me and about 50 other cars were stuck on one side street with no exit routes for over an hour and a half because there were buses from the city to pour in all the firefighters just parked on, you know, they parked wherever they wanted to park on the sides of the road, you know, because for stuff like that, they don't have to follow traffic laws and park, you know, they don't get parking tickets like we would. So it was all blocked off and we literally couldn't go anywhere. And I had two dogs in the back of the car and there was nothing I could do. Even if I just stopped my car and got out, like I couldn't leave the dogs in my car and I couldn't walk the 2 miles to the house. So I had to wait. And when I finally got out of there and finally got close enough to the house, I was told I wasn't allowed to go any further. And I tried to remain calm and explain this situation to a police officer, which I was told, you know, of course I was accused. Oh, you didn't even say, you didn't have the cojones to say anything to anybody. I'm like, no, I did. I tried. And they told me that I wasn't allowed to go down that way. That if I wanted to, I had two options. I could either park my car and walk the mile down, the remaining mile down to this dog's house, which with the two dogs that I had with me, even though I explained this too, it was a hot day where I was already cutting my walk short because of the heat. And they told me that I could take those dogs for a mile walk to get to the other house, where then I would have to walk a mile back with these dogs in the heat. I said, that's not an option. They said, well, you can go around. I said, in order for me to go around, since you have all four directions blocked off, it would take me 5 maybe 7 miles out of the way, which is going to add even more time to my day. This is insane. You were supposed to, we were told you would be done at a certain time, and now you're extended past your time. And then another cop came over and very angrily told me, we're under strict orders. Which is what I, when I completely lost it. But anyway, I made the post, but when I finally got to the dog's house, it was over an hour and a half late. He had urinated on the carpet, which I then have to pay for. To fix, because that's part of the deal I have with my clients, stuff like that's my responsibility. So now I have to pay for that because I was late for things that were out of my control. The next house I was supposed to be at, I was also obviously an hour and a half, more than an hour and a half late for. Same thing happened there. Have to pay for that. And the third one, I had to cancel altogether, which means I lost even further revenue. So I lost revenue in three different, you know, I lost money at three different junctures on top of the fact that I was extorted to pay for this entire process in the first place. Because even though he was an FDNY guy, the cops and the cleanup detail and everything involved in that that happened out here by me, I'm charged to pay for. So I was upset, and I made a post about it, and it went viral because I used the word parasites to describe agents of the government, which is something I've done many, many, many times because I think it's pretty accurate. I've been told repeatedly now that I'm not being honest because it's not accurate because a parasite doesn't provide anything to the host. And I said, well, he didn't provide anything to me, and my money was taken. So how is that not parasitic? I don't make use of most of the services that government claims to provide. I'm still told I need to pay for it, or they're going to take my house away from me, or they're going to threaten to add additional fines to me. And if I refuse those fines, they'll threaten to put me in a cage. And if I refuse to get in that cage, they can and will shoot me. So I have a really hard time understanding how this is not a parasitic relationship. But so that's how it all started. And since then, ooh boy. Let's see. I can't even count the number of death threats I've had at this point. All of course, well, let's see, not all, but the overwhelming majority came on the answering machine for my business because I was doxed. My address was posted everywhere. People were using Google Maps to find my house and posting that everywhere. And obviously my phone number is attached to my business, so that's easily found. Like, all of these things were public records, so they didn't really have to try that hard. But, you know, all the death threats on my voicemail, I think every single one of them calls me a coward, but all of them did not bother to leave a name or a return phone number, and they all called from private numbers, so I couldn't even call them back. I find that interesting, that I'm the coward, despite the fact that I have not only stood my ground on this, but I have not backed down. I have engaged these people on social media, on my phone, on my front lawn, because people have been showing up in my house, and I haven't backed down from any of them. The only woman I didn't have a conversation with was because she showed up. She waited until my ex, who was here helping me with the kids, left. And then tried to get me in a conversation while my kids were inside. And I said, I'm sorry, I have to go inside to take care of my kids. And she said, I'll be back later. But she never returned. But other than that, I've engaged pretty much anybody who's tried to come after me about this. But like I said, so there's been death threats. There's been threats against my family. People have actually threatened the lives of my children. This just happened just before we hopped on here tonight. I had a guy who claimed to be a brother firefighter of this gentleman. He did not list where he's from. And I actually just posted this on my social media site. I screenshotted this. He actually, you know, his own words, he wished for the death of my children. This is a firefighter, ladies and gentlemen. Because he didn't like the words that I used, because he was hurt and angered by the words that I used, it was a word. It wasn't a wish for harm on anybody. It wasn't a wish for death on anybody. Nothing violent, nothing of that nature. But because of that word, these people feel that they are justified in wishing harm. And especially somebody who's supposed to be tasked with saving lives And this individual, who I really want to name names, but Michael told me that I shouldn't, so I'll respect his wishes. That'll be coming on the podcast that come up this week, the other podcast that I do, because I will be, because they're all in violation of the BIPCOT no government license on top of everything else, because everything I say is BIPCOTed. But this guy, among so many others, had the audacity to tell me that I lacked compassion after he had just said that he hopes that when my children are burning to death in my house and I can hear them burning, that I remember that the parasites couldn't come help me. He had the audacity to tell me I lack compassion. This is the mentality of statism, folks. This is the reason I am an anarchist. Statists are violent, disgusting, cowardly individuals, and they are attempting to destroy my life. They want to destroy my business. They're going to be in for a rude awakening when it comes to that. I'm not exactly going to announce that here, but that'll come out soon enough. That plan for them is going to backfire horribly. They want to run me out of town. Same thing. There's some information they're not aware of that is going to backfire on them terribly. So they are, and they're not stopping. You know, I've had my family has some of my family has taken my back. Thankfully, my dad's got my back. A couple other family members have reached out to me and said they don't agree with what I said, but they are horrified by the response, by the fact that these people are wishing death and threatening death and saying all these horrible things about my kids just because I use the word. So it's like, yeah, it's been insane. We're coming closer to the break soon, but yeah, let's see. I mean, there was actually a more credible threat last night. Like I said, I've been receiving these threats and I've been on guard. I keep my family protected. And last night I was told by my ex that there was a more credible threat. She received a phone call from a family member who is NYPD. And who obviously doesn't like me. I can't imagine why. But he was concerned enough that he had heard enough chatter that the FDNY, members of the FDNY were out here and looking to come set my house on fire last night. So, yeah, statism. It's don't do it, folks. It'll hurt a lot. We'll be back to talk about more of this after the break.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Cell 411 is a free app for Android and iOS that replaces government-controlled 911. Cell 411 allows you to preset a group of friends or private organizations to show up in any emergency. Cell 411 is a nightmare for the state because it proves their so-called services aren't needed. Cell 411 has had thousands of installs, and of course it's covered by the BIPCOT no government license. Cell 411 because your friends won't shoot you when you're in trouble. Without the government, who would build the emergency services? You and Cell 411. Get it today at GetCell411.com. That's GetCell411.com.
Woof, woof. Yeah. So we're back. I might let Phil talk a little bit during this segment. I was on my soapbox ranting away. Didn't even realize how long I had gone until all of a sudden I looked. I was like, oh yeah, we're about to come to break soon. So I don't even remember where I left off now. I've been telling the story so many times, but yeah, Phil. So that's kind of the gist of what I've been dealing with here. It's insanity. Yeah,
well, I think getting death threats from NYPD warrants a little bit of ranting, a little bit of venting, because yeah, that's not exactly a fun position to be in. I wanted to ask you some questions about it. So what exactly because I think you had some choice terminology that may not be repeated on radio.
A lot of this is not radio friendly.
Right. But what exactly did you say on that thing that got them so riled up?
Oh, well, the post was very short, and the one thing that I think set it off was that stupid color scheme thing they have on Facebook now, where you can use colors to some of your, if their posts are short enough, they can kind of make them into memes almost. That feature finally got turned on my Facebook, and I didn't realize that I was sending it. I thought I was just putting it out as a regular post, but it went out like that, so the letters got blown up, and it looked like a meme. So it was much more easily shareable. But the post itself simply said, "Stuck in traffic for over an hour with no escape options, all because of the death of an agent of the state." And then I said, "Feinsteining parasites." Specifically using the word agents and parasites, not agent and parasite, because I was talking about all of them. Because I wasn't, but they all flipped out because they all thought I was calling this one man, just this one man, a parasite, and I was disparaging his honor. That's it. That's all I said.
Yeah. Yeah, because I remember when I read it, I'll be honest, the first takeaway I had was, that seems excessively insensitive. But, yeah. Of course, and if you're in a position where your emotions are reeling, a friend of yours just died or whatever, I can understand, people getting upset about it.
Oh, sure.
Of course, that doesn't justify threatening death by any means. Mm-hmm. And of course, when you look at it, at the way you actually, the terminology you use, you were really complaining, as I understand, about the loss of revenue from the people that were being paid to clog up the streets that day,
Yes, exactly.
Which maybe they felt like they would take it personally upon, as an attack against themselves as well. But
yeah, and you want to get upset with what I say or what I write, okay, that's fine. I don't expect people to agree with what I say or like what I say, but like you said, to take it to the level that they have is insane. Because aside, like this, it all started because I made the post. It got a bunch of likes from a bunch of anarchists I know, obviously, because they all knew where I was coming from. They knew what I meant. And the first person to jump into all of this, who was not an anarchist, was a friend of mine's cousin, who was very offended and started going on and on and on. And right away, I tried to explain my position. I gave my arguments. I explained why it's not him. I'm not happy that he died. I'm very upset that I lost money. I was, I have to pay for cleanups. I have to do I lost money over money over money over something that I didn't do, and that didn't matter. She didn't want to listen to anything. She just immediately went and told all her friends, which many of them were people that I went to, quote unquote, went to high school with, because I was barely in high school. And all of these people came out of the woodwork claiming, and it started off as attacks on my character that, I was a loser in high school. I'm like, none of you remember me from high school because I wasn't there. They were all remembering my sisters and trying to conjure up memories of me and just attack me and slander me and hope I go away. And then it went viral, and then they kept sharing it, and then they just kept twisting it that I was happy that he died and all this stuff. And then they immediately went after my business and they want to shut my business down, which, again, even that I think is insane, but fine, go that. But the death threats and the threats against my kids is where it more than crossed the line, yeah. Doxing people that I don't even talk to in order to harass me is well above, well beyond the line. But I'm the one who's the coward. I'm the one who's, the bad guy here. And I'm the one responsible for all these psychos, apparently, too.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Antiwar, pro-free market. That's Antiwar.com.
That is indeed who we are. So we're back. We've been discussing some very interesting happenings with this insane number of death threats coming to Jeremy, and it's completely baffling. I'm just sitting here in honestly not overly surprising. But I've just been sitting here kind of with my jaw open, just how is this, it's like they're not even hiding the fact that they're just a gang. They really are a gang. And I saw a documentary recently called The 7-5. It was about a corruption case that came down against District 75 and Police Department in New York City. And they were having interviews about, all of the nefarious things that this one cop and his buddies would do. And the thing is, they were talking about multiple things, about the academy and about the other cops in the district. And it was a whole lot of, oh yeah, man, I wanted to stay away, we knew that we should stay away from this guy. Nobody wanted to be his partner because, he was notoriously bad. But nobody wants to rat on him because nobody wants to be a rat because, it's really mob talk. Nobody wants to be a rat. That's and because they're trained in the academy to and they treat the streets kind of like a war zone, essentially. And it's us versus them. And in reality, them is the citizen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they don't, I mean, when it comes to like the police, especially the NYPD, I almost expect that type of behavior because it's been that way for a very long time. But to see this reaction from the FDNY as well, and again, like you said, I completely understand how people could read that and flip out and be really, really mad at me. I get it. But the attitude that these folks take, where like you said, they're a gang. I mean, I actually, one of the comments I did make when I was finally allowed back, because I received a Facebook ban over all this because enough people reported the post, although Facebook didn't seem to have a problem with it because they let it stand. They let me back in 24 hours later. But one of the first things that I wrote when I came back was this entire Facebook thread now, which is now climbing over 11,000 comments, would be a ridiculously amazing case study in pack animal behaviorism, because the way that these people just attack a word, one word, and just jump on it and foam at the mouth, and just, this insane game of telephone gets played where people pass the information along, and every time it gets passed, it changes a little bit, but they're all just reacting. That's all they are. They're reacting. And, and again, everybody thinks that I hate firefighters. No, that's not the case. I mean, now all the firefighters seem to hate me, but I was very clear about this and have been for a very long time. I have no issue with volunteer fire departments. I have one in my town. I happily donate to it every time they come to the door, whether it's because they come multiple times a year. Sometimes they come because they're also our local fire department is also the local volunteer fire department is also the one that paints the street numbers, the house numbers on the curbs of our streets. Like they go around once a year or once every 2 years and update so everybody can find people's houses. you know, so if they don't have house numbers on their houses, you know, they do that. So I give them money for that every year, and every other time they come back, whatever, usually whatever cash I have in my pocket, I just hand over, because I had a great working relationship with these people. I voluntarily gave them money, and they provide excellent service. I even had them tell me that if I ever had an emergency with my children, to call them and not 911, because they would have a better response time. And we tested that, not on purpose, because my ex at one point called 911 for an emergency, and then we had the fire department do it. Fire department was quicker every time. So I have no I still have no problem with them. They now have a problem with me because they think I'm attacking them as well, but I'm not, because I don't have a problem with volunteer fire departments. I don't have a problem with private security police either, as long as I have a choice. You don't have a choice when it's the FDNY and it's the only game in town.
Yeah. And it's really upsetting that they're doing this, because, you know, the FDNY is at least under the auspices now of still being there solely to save lives and save, you know, to a lesser extent, property. You know, they're supposed to be there to help people and save people, and they're dropping death threats, threatening arson. I mean,
yeah,
really?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, see, now that's an interesting point, because you would think that's a firefighter threatening arson. That just seems like completely twisted. But one of the people who was trying to help me out through this entire process, my friend Daniel, got it in his head at one point when all these people kept talking about what heroes firefighters are and what heroes firefighters, and I'm horrible for disparaging heroes. He decided to go Google the terms firefighters and arson and firefighters and rape. And you would not believe the amount of headlines he came back with from newspapers from all across the country, just from the past decade or so, maybe two decades tops, of arsons by firefighters. And as soon as I started reading that, I said, oh my God, now I remember. What was that? Backdraft. You ever see Backdraft? With William Baldwin and Kurt Russell, the movie about firefighters?
No, I've never. I kind of make it a point not to watch Billy Baldwin movies.
Ah, gotcha.
Except for maybe Biodome. But,
yeah. Well, no, that wasn't Billy Baldwin. That was, wasn't that the other one?
I don't know. They're Baldwins. They're all the same.
Well, I don't know. Anyway, well, that was actually a really good movie. And it was about this fire company that was trying to stop this string. Oh, was it? Might not have been. De Niro was in it, too. I may have been wrong about Kurt Russell, but I know De Niro was in it. But it was about, you know, how these firefighters and one of their inspectors were trying to stop this string of arsons. And in the end, when they caught the guy, it was one of their own. Because just like a cop, the line, they can pretty much commit the perfect murder because they know what other cops will look for. A firefighter can commit the perfect arson in most cases because they know what other firefighters and inspectors will look for.
Right.
So not all of these folks are heroes. The guy that died apparently was, from what I read up on him, you know, he had saved at least two lives, which are both. And I tried to explain this to one gentleman who called me yesterday. I think two people out of all the nasty calls and stuff I got, because I was standing by the phone for quite a while, and I would let the answer machine pick it up, and I would wait to hear what they had to say. And sometimes I would pick it up, sometimes I wouldn't. And one guy picked it up, and I ended up having a very nice conversation with him. And at the end, he still said he wasn't thrilled with what I said, but he understood. Like, he started off by leaving a message saying he was going to destroy he was going to make sure my entire company was destroyed. He was going to make it his life's mission to destroy my company. At the end of that conversation, he said, I still don't agree with your position, but now I understand where you're coming from, and maybe I was a little bit too harsh. And that's all I could ask. That was great. Another gentleman called up, and I went back and forth with him, and he just, you know, he wanted to have a conversation. Like he said, I've read some things. I hope they're not true, but I'd like to hear your side of the story. So I tried to explain it to him. But he just kept coming down to this, but heroes. And I said, yes, yeah. What he did, those two situations, those were heroic acts. Absolutely. That has nothing to do with the fact of how he was paid, which is my argument in the first place. And that is what everybody wants to keep missing, because it's much easier to act like an angry mob and attack me for the word that I chose to use, you know. And yes, insensitive is a word has been thrown around for a while, thrown around a lot, and I get it. Although the one thing I found hysterical, folks. And I'm sorry if that offends you, that I found things funny about this, because I had to laugh. Otherwise, I might have gone insane. But
yeah, there's a reason why gallows humor exists.
Exactly. But there, you know, somebody posted something I saw somewhere that's like, I don't know this guy. And I get that everybody's really mad at him. But I just went and checked out his Facebook wall. And before that post, he had like a string of 5 or 6 memes in a row that were all Max Stirner. Did anybody really expect sensitivity and strong moral compass from this guy? And I was like, well, you know, you got a point. although I will say I'm not a full-blown egoist. You know, our former co-host Jim Jesus and I, he's been leading me in that direction. I'm still learning and reading. I'm not saying I'm an egoist, but I appreciate some of Stirner's stuff. But I found that funny, because I was like, well, yeah, I'm going to say insensitive things. I'm sorry. I'm sorry that I'm going to say insensitive things. I'm not sorry about the insensitive things I say, however, because, yeah. You know, like I said, aside from the insults and the curses and everything else I get, coward is the word that keeps getting thrown at me. And that one just blows my mind. How can you call somebody cowardly who not only says something that offends you, but then stands up for himself and doesn't run and hide? Doesn't turn his phone off, doesn't shut his website, you know, like I changed my Facebook settings back to friends for everything else, just because they were going through my stuff and taking pictures of my kids and making horribly disgusting memes out of them. I did that. With horribly nasty words, either calling them horribly nasty words or using my children to call me horribly nasty words. Which, again, I'm saying horribly nasty words because we're on the radio. I'm not offended by the words they called me, in case anybody's wondering. I don't care. I don't get offended. But I left that post public because I'm not hiding from this. So if you people really think that I'm cowardly, you have no idea what that word means. More when we get back to the break.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Hi, have you heard about Bitcoin? Not Bitcoin, but Bipcoin. Bravo, India, Papa, Coin. Bipcoin is a new cryptocurrency that you can start mining today for free on ordinary computers. Unlike most altcoins, Bipcoin is not a clone of Bitcoin. Bipcoin is based on entirely new, more recent, and better code called CryptoNote. So unlike Bitcoin, Bipcoin has truly untraceable transactions, does not require specialized mining rigs, and has adaptive limits. Plus, Bipcoin is the only cryptocurrency covered by the BIPCOT no government license. This allows use and reuse by anyone except governments and government agents. If you're still kicking yourself in the head for not getting in on the ground floor of Bitcoin, start mining, using, and trading Bipcoin today.
Not a guarantee.
Mining Bipcoin costs you nothing but the electricity to run your computer. And we already take Bipcoin for stickers and buttons. Go to bipcoin.org. That's bipcoin.org. Once again, that's Bravo, India, Papa, coin.org.
We are back, and today, in a display of explosive snowflakeism, or today in explosive snowflakeism, one man complains about traffic and is thereby piled on by a gang of collectively butthurt police and firemen. Yeah. This is just an astonishing story, just how upfront and blatant it is, and you know, we knew they were a gang, we knew they were completely violent minded, but But geez, this is just amazing to me. I'm still kind of flabbergasted, I guess is the word.
I understand. I expect that response. I get it a lot already. I expect, but the word snowflake that you chose to use is also very. It's important that you pointed that out, because that's another one. Aside from coward, that's the other word that has been most often levied. At least of the ones I can say on radio, that has been levied against myself and my friends who came to my defense.
Oh, that's hilarious. That is ridiculous.
We're the snowflakes because I complained about traffic. Right? We're the snowflakes because they're defending me. Because they're now saying nasty things and we're pointing out that they're threatening death. Oh, what's the matter, snowflake? It's like, wait a minute. I'm sorry. Do you not realize that you are the people that are reacting to the word with threats of violence? Doesn't that sound an awful lot like the Antifa people that you're all supposed to be against?
That's exactly what I was going to say. I mean, I bet these are the same exact guys pulling the snowflake name on Antifa. And don't get me wrong, Antifa is a whole bunch of violent snowflakes. But,
that's where I found hilarity in this. I was like, really? Like, the first time somebody said it, I was like, okay, it's just one of those internet idiots. But it kept coming up. And like, so many of my friends were all like, really? Did you just call me the snowflake? You realize that you're here on the Facebook post of some man that you don't know spending days calling for his death, wishing bad things on him, attacking him and his friends, and making yourself look like idiots because of a word.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just gonna, these are the guys that allowed a single term that upset them to commence in an enormous display of collective blue line butthurt. It's ridiculous.
Well, it's red line butthurt. Well, although there's some blue line. I think that some of the NYPD aren't very happy with me either, but most of them weren't happy with me to begin with. But there is a rivalry between the two. They're not very, the NYPD and the FDNY are still not very fond of each other. Despite coming together again for 9/11, there's still hostilities there. I mean, some people claim that it's just a friendly rivalry. No, I know a lot of firefighters that think most of the NYPD are horrible people, and I know the reverse is the same as well. So, NYPD has been involved, because one of my buddies, my buddy Merrick, was actually threatened by an NYPD officer. Like, right. he was physically threatened over this by an NYPD officer. And Merrick is not one to back down to a challenge. He invited him down to his house and tried to explain to him nicely that they don't play the game. They don't play the games in Florida the way they do in New York. So come on down and join us. But he called me and he's like, yeah, you know what? These threats are getting a little more serious. I hope you're not just, you know, shrugging all of these off, because some of these guys are really crazy. And they are. But the snowflake thing, like I said, it got me. I was just really, a lot of this was a running string of that Inigo Montoya meme over and over and over again. You keep using that word. I do not think it means what you think it means. Because snowflake,
inconceivable, bro.
Coward, there's a lot of words they apparently don't know the meanings though. But they throw them around, and they, you know, but again, I'm the horrible guy. And again, you know, and again, you can think I'm horrible, that's great. But if you got to threaten my kids, or even if you have to threaten physical violence at all, even on me, because you think I'm a horrible guy, you may want to look in the mirror, Cupcake, because I think you have greater issues than you're even aware of. So, all right, I think I've got my rant out for now. When we come back, we'll try to switch it up a little bit in the second hour.
Are you a political activist who does things that the government might not like? Then this free ebook may save your life. Rats is your guide to protecting yourself against snitches, informers, informants, agents provocateur, narcs, finks, and similar vermin. Rats was written by OG libertarian Claire Wolf. Rats is a short book, easy to read, and available free in many formats. Download Rats free at rats-nosnitch.com. That's rats-nosnitch.com.
Freedom Fiends, broadcasting through the Libertarian Reeducation Center's low orbit ion cannon high atop Financial Beast Plaza on the artificial satellite LibPair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. The Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. So how you doing, Jeremy?
I am good, Phil. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing okay. I'm sitting tight, sitting pretty, waiting for the next earthquake.
That's always fun.
Yeah. Yeah, that's one of the hazards of moving to the West Coast. Of course, one you know, I'm in the Pacific Northwest, so it doesn't.
Yeah, I was gonna say, do they happen that often? I mean, I know they can, but do they happen that often up that far north? Or
yeah, no, they're not as often. At least I don't think they're as nearly as often as they are in California. I haven't encountered one yet, and I've been up here for close to 6 months, I think. So.
Let's hope that streak continues for you, Phil.
Yeah, definitely, especially as long as I'm in my apartment, because the way this building acts when a storm hits, it really feels like if the breeze is too heavy, the building is just going to topple right over. So I can't imagine how this thing would survive during an earthquake. But it's been here since the 20s, so I guess there must be something. Maybe the wiggliness of the building is actually part of the structural integrity that keeps it going. But
yeah,
I suppose I'll see if anything happens. But we're going to we've been speaking of some interesting government sponsored threats of violence.
Yes.
Over the last hour, but we're going to transition to race. I'm talking about race, and
yeah, let's go to a much less controversial subject, Phil.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. We're going to
light the mood around here, folks.
Yeah. So we've been talking about some quasi hardline right stuff already, so we're going to continue with that. We might even end up getting into some alt-left topics if we go into gender stuff, but there was somebody who commented on a former show, and this is in the show notes for Friends Don't Let Friends Alt-Right. It's
yes. I was on that show. Wasn't I? Was I with you guys that night?
I'm sure you were.
I was, yeah, I thought so.
But it's page number 14062.
Yeah, I'll put it in the notes.
Nice. But yeah, so this guy commented. He goes under the tagline, the avatar former ANCAP. If, capital IF, you guys can refute race realism and race statistics, that'd be your best bet for refuting the alt-right instead of just saying fake libertarian and they suck, which is 90% of this podcast. Refute Jared Taylor and FBI statistics. Good luck with that, though, because I don't think you can. It's easy to go after low-hanging fruit like Spencer or Molyneux. So Spencer is indeed low-hanging fruit. He's straight up... I believe he's come out finally as a straight up white supremacist. I know he supports a white ethno state. And of course, Stefan Molyneux is a former libertarian. I think he actually still considers himself to be some sort of ANCAP libertarian,
Of course, because it's not like he voted. He just told everybody else to go do it.
Oh, right. Yeah. It's not like he's wrong about anything other than expecting other people to think he's right about everything. But
Molly Poo.
Right. So Molyneux is, you know, he's this former libertarian and now part of the, essentially the quasi-alt-right. Yeah, I think it's safe to say that he's an alt-righter and super Trump supporter. Mm. But it's too easy to end up just going on a rant about Molyneux. So I'm going to try my best to refrain, recenter my thought process on this whole race realism thing. So the idea of race realism is, and we might actually be coming back to this because this isn't something that I've studied very deeply, but as I understand it, the idea of race realism is based on averages, essentially. And it's, you know, certain races in America. By the way, race isn't really very well defined in general. So I think generally what they actually are trying to go for is ethnicity, but which is a different thing. But the idea is certain races have across the globe different averages of IQ, for one, and different averages of crime statistics and, you know, poverty outcomes and stuff like that, which creates, and more importantly, different averages of, you know, socialist ideology and things like that. Like, I think the one of the claims is that Hispanic cultures tend to vote more left, and certainly Black cultures tend to vote more left in America, and therefore, you know, government is required to keep the socialists from taking over or whatever, and you know, it's also used to push this sort of superiority, although they won't, they try to distance themselves from that term superiority or supremacy based on stuff like crime statistics. So let me address the crime thing first. I really kind of believe that they have this causation mixed up. So there's not really any denying that crime rates are, you know, disproportionately high in Black communities in America, specifically Black urban communities. But the and also there's also this issue with IQ being claimed to be have lower average. I think this is established in the book Bell Curve. I can't remember the author of that right now, but
it's on the tip of my tongue. I'm like, yeah, I can't remember.
Right.
Charles Murray? Yeah, was it Charles Murray? No.
Yes, Charles Murray.
Charles Murray. There you go.
But he actually just had a discussion with Sam Harris about this whole thing. But
should be interesting.
What was that?
I said those two together should be interesting. I don't think I've ever heard them speak together. I've heard them speak separately. Sam Harris kind of drives me a little batty, but...
Yeah, Sam Harris has some strange ideas. Like, he makes a lot of assumptions with things that, you know, and he acts like he's doing it in a purely academic, rigorous way when he's really not, because he's making assumptions and skipping steps and stuff. But but yeah, that's another subject. So as I understand Jared Taylor likes to rely a lot on this bell curve theory and that he gets from Charles Murray. Now, Charles Murray wasn't trying to push a race realism or supremacy idea. He was just, you know, putting this down into this book and, you know, as an intellectual exercise, and also as a, here's an issue. This might be something we need to address in some way. But he wasn't trying to push it into this whole race realism paradigm that a lot of people have taken it as their flag.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing about IQ and crime rates is that this is a causation correlation mix up, at least as far as I understand what their thesis is, and the idea is that black
black people inherently commit more crime. And, well, why do you assume that this is caused by, just because it correlates with having a, you know, with a certain subculture in America, why do you assume that it's causation or causally related to their, essentially their skin color? Because that's what the race is about. It's not actually about, you know, region. You know, again, I may misunderstand. They may be implying region, but then again, if you actually look at immigrants from like countries like I think it's Nigeria, they actually are very successful in America. You know, they discount other factors like the war on poverty, the war on crime, which have exploded crime rates in America. I'm sorry, not the war on crime, the war on drugs. But and you know they completely kind of ignore this time frame in the 50s and 60s when black families were actually doing quite well. I mean, they were their economic mobility was higher than that of whites during that time, and this is kind of just ignored for this thesis. And you know, the crime rates were a lot lower. You know, Thomas Sowell, an economist who I believe grew up in Harlem, he used to speak about how he would sleep on the fire escape in Harlem, which, you know, nowadays, or at least in the 90s, would be unthinkable because you'd of the risk of being shot. You know,
I live close enough to it. Harlem's not a fun place.
Right, exactly. So but you know, back in the 60s, you know, you could do this. You could sleep on your fire escape without the worry about being shot. And it's not like it was, you know, a whole lot less of a black neighborhood or anything, at least as I understand.
I'm pretty sure back then it was still pretty heavily dominated by blacks, Harlem.
Right. Yeah. But this is kind of brushed over with the assumption, well, you know, crime rate's high, ergo. There's also an issue about the IQ rate averages, which, you know, of course we'll come back to after the break.
Yeah.
But a lot of this is just kind of placing ideas of averages on how you treat individuals, which is never a good time.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Are you sick of seeing peaceful people being locked away for victimless crimes? Instead of trying to get out of jury duty, consider taking it so you can do the right thing. A single juror with a conscience can send someone home to their family instead of to a jail cell. If there's no victim, how can there be a crime? And if the judge or prosecutor are keeping you in the dark, what are they trying to hide? You can vote your conscience instead of being a pawn of the state. For more information, Google jury nullification or check out the Fully Informed Jury Association at fija.org.
Yum, yum. Freedom Fiends, we are back. So we cut off the next last segment at the IQ issue, and I suspect this might take us into over two segments. But one of the arguments from alt writers and race realists is the average IQ rate being different between different ethnicities and races, and the one of the issues with this is that IQ has to be renormed I don't know how often, but after a certain period of time, IQ generally has to be renormed. And the reason for this is because populations tend to get smarter over time. And it's, you know, it's one of the facts of human evolution, I guess. And also, the assumption behind the IQ idea is that IQ is perhaps not entirely, but very much driven, you know, or primarily driven by genetics, which I don't believe has actually been proven. So there are, and in fact, that actually would violate the idea of the regression to the mean. So the regression to the mean is the idea that, well, just because you have an unusually high IQ doesn't necessarily mean that your child will, because, you know, people tend to kind of divert back towards the average. Now, this is beyond my knowledge, you know, as far as the depth of that. But so I won't address it further. But
well, that's about all. That's how I understand it too. So
right, yeah.
We'll just leave it there and move on.
Yeah, but the IQ issue is, you know, so if it's it's assumed that it's genetic, but that's I don't believe that's actually been proven that it's even primarily or mostly genetic. But
I've seen studies on it. You see people keep claiming that they've proven it, but yeah, as far as I know, there hasn't been any proof yet. So
right, and also there's this issue of a study suggests, you know, if a single study doesn't really mean anything other than, you know, and you can put this in quotes, warrants further study. That's what a single study means. So, but if you have one study that suggests a certain outcome, what that means is that you go into studying it further. And if you have multiple, this is what the whole concept of repetition is in science. You repeat the study multiple times so that you essentially confirm that one event isn't a random occurrence, because usually the cutoff for these events, for the rare occurrence cutoff, is like, well, if the probability of rejecting the null hypothesis is less than about 5%, maybe sometimes even 10%, sometimes 1%, then, you know, or and your study falls within this area of very, very low percentage occurrence, then that's what confirms the study. You know, that's what gives you positive results. But that's still not a super low occurrence rate. So you want to repeat the study multiple times to make sure that this isn't some random occurrence, or make sure that somebody hasn't done some p-hacking. P-hacking would be where they mess with the study in some way to create significance where they may not otherwise be. So one example of that would be repeating a study multiple times until the positive result happens, and you know, only publishing that without modifying it to make up for the repetition. Say what?
So without mentioning all the failures.
Right, exactly, and this is one of the issues with publishing, the whole publisher perish paradigm, because academic journals really do not like negative results or inconclusive results. They like positive results because it gets more readers, it gets more excitement. They may get published in more mainstream news sources and journals and everything. So this really creates a negative incentive towards studies that don't, or towards trying to publish studies that don't have the results that you're looking for. So, or at least some sort of exciting result. But yeah, that, again, diversion. We'll get back to the IQ stuff after the break again.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends Radio Show. I've run websites since 1996 and have used over a dozen web hosts in that time. AgoristHosting.com is the only one that hasn't broken my heart. Agorist Hosting's uptime and service is stellar, and their DDoS mitigation is the best I've seen. That's important because if you tell the truth in this world, you'll ruffle feathers. No matter what the haters hit us with, Agorist Hosting keeps our websites online. If you have a mission-critical commercial presence or a world-changing activism site, go with AgoristHosting.com.
question about IQ keeps coming up in the race realists alt-right circles, and it might be good to address what IQ is. So IQ is actually a psychometric measure that's supposed to essentially estimate a person's intelligence. And there's a method that that's used to sort of come up with this. It's called factor analysis. It's the bread and butter of psychometrics, which is the statistics side of psychology as a field. And what they do is they have a certain number of variables that produce a given outcome, and you can look at this through a regression equation. Regression being a, you know, essentially just that you look at a certain number of variables and see how they affect a certain outcome. And what factor analysis does is it says, okay, well, there's this theoretic other variable that affects all of those variables that you're all of those predictor variables that are supposed to predict the outcome, but really that variable, that theoretical variable that we don't know about, is really what's predicting that outcome. So let's see if we can come up with some sort of combination of the variables we do have to estimate that theoretical variable. And as I understand it, this type of process is what came up with the idea of IQ. IQ being this theoretical other variable that you know, affects whatever outcome they're looking for, be it, you know, logical ability or whatever. And the idea in the way it's used in race realism is essentially based on, like I said before, averages of, well, certain races have an average IQ of a certain number of standard deviations below the mean. The mean being average, overall average, or a certain number of standard deviations below the average of these other races. And this is used a lot against blacks and Middle Easterners. So one of the arguments against to use it against blacks is that the average is, of course, lower than that of other cultures, being either white or Ashkenazi Jews or Asian or whatever. So they use this thesis to try to push, like in the Richard Spencer case, it would be the white ethno state, and in other alt-right cases, it might be this right-wing backlash against I don't know, you know, the whole supporting Trump thing, all that. But the thing about this is they ignore a lot of other factors that seem to be linked to IQ. So one of the issues that I spoke about earlier was that humans evolve and they have to renorm IQ every so and so years because humans on average get smarter. Well, there's no reason to believe that this isn't a universal trait, that this isn't the same for those who happen to be below average. Another thing that affects people's IQ in the long term are things like nutrition, lead poisoning, maybe events like, you know, the Tuskegee syphilis experiment, because syphilis is something that affects cognitive functioning. So if you have a 40-year study on a large population that where you're essentially affecting them with syphilis, that could have long-term effects, and it could have epigenetic effects or even, you know, pass on effects down to their children. Of course, that's only one area, but that would be one straw of hay in a whole bundle. There are also issues of lead poisoning that can affect cognitive function, things like that, you know. And of course, the nutrition issue is going to be more prevalent in the poorer population. So a lot of this stuff is going to affect, you know, negative life outcomes, prison, or negative childhood outcomes, which is a lot more common since the war on drugs, things like that. Also, if you look at the Iranian thing, so one of the claims that Molyneux likes to bandy about is the lower IQ in Iran, which was based on a study in the 1950s or something, I think. And but of course, if you look at the average IQ in certain countries like Iraq and Afghanistan right now, well, they're probably going to be a lot lower. For one, probably because we have been dropping depleted uranium shells on them. That could have effect.
You mean that doesn't give them superpowers?
Right, exactly.
I thought that's how they were trying to help all those people.
Yeah, I thought we were just making a whole bunch of green lanterns over there. But, so there are so many factors that go into this that you can't just kind of look at those averages and say, well, these averages have this difference, and therefore, racial superiority or innate racial characteristics that cause this. You know, that's by no means proven.
We're not being racist. We're just going by the numbers, man. The
right,
numbers don't
exactly.
lie, Phil. Numbers don't lie.
Yeah, and it's as far as I can tell. And again, there may be some sort of deeper idea behind it that I just haven't looked into. But as far as I can tell, it is a whole giant mess of the correlation causation mix-up, assuming causation out of correlation, and it's ridiculous. It's the most common and most egregious statistical error that happens in journalism and political science and social science is this correlation causation assumption. And it is maddening for every statistician ever how often this happens. It's ridiculous. It causes me to go into rant mode, obviously. but even beyond all the statistics, another one is the MAO-A gene hypothesis. So this is something that's been studied a few times to link the MAOA gene to crime, and it seems to correlate that people with the higher MAOA gene have higher criminal tendencies. Well, okay, who has the highest rate of MAOA gene? Mm-hmm. Well, the black population. Maybe there are some confounding variables there that are causing that correlation to pop up. You know, maybe it's not a direct correlation there, and possibly not, certainly not a causation. There have been similar studies on the MAOA gene in Asian populations that found zero correlation whatsoever with the MAOA gene and antisocial behavior, which is essentially psychopathy, sociopathy, and criminal behavior. So that's another thing, another issue where they're just kind of assuming causation from this correlation without bothering to take into account possible extraneous or confounding variables. But even beyond this, even beyond the whole statistics thing, even if you give them all of this, like, okay, yeah, average IQs are lower, ergo, inferiority in some manner or other, or, certain populations vote on average more socialist, and ergo, you have to protect white culture or European culture or whatever. Even if you give them the assumption of these averages, that doesn't give you all that tells me is that you are foregoing your principles. You're putting your principles aside in favor of utilitarianism. It's the same justify the means argument that you hear from communists. It's the same exact thing. And this is one of those things when I see libertarians allying with fascists, or even talking about how they might they understand the fascist case and they would rather line up with fascists or white nationalists or whatever. you're abandoning principles. That, you know, anarcho-capitalism is supposed to be a principled ideal. That's the point, is that you're acting on your principles. When you are voting for when you're going for this you know, white nationalist state, or going full-on collectivists, or supporting political rulers because you think that they will have a more expedient path to whatever your ends are, you are not following your principles. You are breaking and especially with Molyneux, because Molyneux was his whole spiel. He was supposed to be about principles and not about
expediency.
Utilitarianism.
Expediency, utilitarianism, anything. Yeah, what was his whole thing was always, if somebody who claims to be principled, if you find them being under principled, then you shouldn't listen to them. Same thing with the morals. If, you know, somebody who claims to be a moral philosopher, if you find them doing that, just ignore everything else they say. But a couple years later, when it's convenient, oh, well, no, right. Now. Yeah. Anybody who mentions this type of stuff to these individuals usually gets called a purist, which I still find one of the most ridiculous insults, because what's like you said, if your particular ideology, philosophy, whatever, if it's built upon principles, then you're supposed to follow them. You're too good of an anarcho-capitalist is what they're telling you if you're an ANCAP, and they say that if you're an ANCAP purist, so you're saying, yeah, I'm too good of an ANCAP. You know, you're a purist libertarian.
Irony is being called a purist by a white nationalist.
I didn't even think of it from that angle. That's great. Oh, man. Checkmate, alt-right.
Oh, boy. Oh, that's beautiful.
Purist and proud, baby. Purist and proud.
Worms.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. Basic Handgun and Rifle with Jared Waltz.
First rule of being alive is you own yourself.
A groundbreaking approach to firearms and self-defense training. Beautifully filmed and easy to understand instructions make this one a must-have. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. New DVD from Michael W. Dean, available on Amazon.
Your house is your property.
Do we have any redemption after all this horrible, horrible stuff we've been talking about?
Well, we can speak about solutions. So there are solutions to some of these ideas that race realists claim to, or white ethno-state supporters claim to have their solutions for. And, one of the... The claim is that the claim by a lot of these race realists is, well, the cause for the cause of crime is really clear. It's certain races. Well, fine, make that statement. If you want to have that thesis, whatever. But if you look at the data, you know, the cause for crime tends to be a couple of things. So it's I think the largest cause of crime is relative poverty. So what that is not poverty per se, but relative poverty, which means you're poorer than the people around you. And when this happens is when people get insanely rich over the people around them. And one of the things that causes this is really government action. It's stuff like these insane income inequalities would not happen on such a scale without government intervention. And it's one of those things that, you know, like people wouldn't get to where they are without at least IP law. IP law is one of the things that drives the ridiculous riches that, you know, the bubbling riches. And beyond that, you know, like, you know, Bill Gates wouldn't be, no, don't get me wrong, Bill Gates deserves to be rich. He enriched so many people's lives. But he wouldn't be a kabillionaire. that's a number, look it up. No, it's not. But he wouldn't be so ridiculously rich as he is without IP law and without, you know, a lot of interacting with the government to sort of inflate his riches, be, you know, at the expense of other people. And I think that's one of the things that really causes a lot of the envious ideas. Also, the war on drugs is, of course, one of the biggest drivers in crime rates, if not the biggest right now. But, you know, it's all of these issues that are claimed to need government to solve are easily solved by simple free market activity, property, you know, property rights, abandoning this insane idea of intellectual property, which is just thought crime. That's all it is. It's thought crime. It's you cannot rearrange your own materials in the way that you see fit because somebody else did it first. That's all it is.
Yeah.
And rent seeking by already rich people who have the resources to crank the wheels of government in order to increase their riches beyond what they already are. You know, these are the things that create these incentives for crime in these areas. So maybe attack this from an economic point of view and say, well, what are the incentives that are causing these things to happen, rather than saying, oh, it's some sort of genetic factor because this correlation happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, there's always ways to do other things, yeah.
Yeah. So that's my redemption. I think that's a positive message. But we have solutions that we know about, that we know can be implemented if we just get the will, if enough people inform themselves and build strength in their principles and stop abandoning them in order to gain expediency to go to whatever utopian vision they have in mind. If your utopia requires violence to achieve, then it's not a utopia. It's not an idea worth having. If you require violence to support to create your world, I don't want that world.
Here,
utopias
here.
Don't exist.
Huh? Is it here? I agree, man. Absolutely. I mean, you know, going back to what we spoke on the first hour, you know, we're not the violent ones. So, yeah. There are other ways, folks. Just because you haven't seen them doesn't mean they don't exist.